Chapter 8. Patient Dogs and Wise Humans. Your dog will be happier if you teach him to be patient and polite, and if you behave like a benevolent leader. Domino, the border collie, trotted into my office, politely came over to smell my hand, and then proceeded to sniff his way around the room. While he did, Beth and I talked about why she was here, although the purple and yellow bruises on her forearm were a clue. He had bitten her, not just once, but repeatedly. Although the bites weren't deep and her bruised arm was healing fast, the trust that she had once had in her dog was severely injured. Last week, Domino wouldn't listen when Beth tried to call him away from barking at the window. His barking had become increasingly aggressive when people walked by the house with their own dogs. He was getting so agitated that Beth was afraid he would go through the window. Her concern is not unreasonable. It's happened to two of my clients. When Beth tried raising her voice to get Domino to stop bark charging at the window, he paid no attention, so she took him by the collar and started to pull him away. In an instant, he turned and bit her, not once, but three times, and then went back to barking out the window. Beth was as shocked as she was hurt. She'd had dogs all her life and had never had one turn on her. Domino had been a delightful puppy and had been the love of her life for more than a year. Now he was maturing into a beautiful young dog, but she was growing increasingly afraid of him. Several times he'd turned and snapped at her when she took him by the collar, and now he'd bitten her. Last night he growled at her when she tried to push him over on the couch. Beth felt betrayed and scared by the behavior of the dog, who used to be her best friend. Just as we were concluding the interview part of our session, someone walked by the window to the office, a basset hound slumping alongside. Domino paused for an instant and then exploded at the window, his barks loud enough to hurt your ears. Beth visibly shrank back an inch or two. I said, "Oh, good," because now I could see Domino in action. I walked over to him, careful to keep my hands to my side, and quietly observed him while he charged at the window. Beth hadn't been exaggerating. Domino really was out of control. He wasn't just out of her control. He had worked himself up into such an aroused state that he was out of his own control. I have no doubt that if I had taken his collar, he would have whirled and bitten my arm just as he had Beth's the week before. His eyes were huge and round, and his pupils were fully dilated. His hackles were up. Pilo erected is the proper term. From his shoulders to his rump, a sure sign of high arousal in a dog. His mouth was open wide, his breathing short and fast, and his body seemed to be moving in at least three directions at once. It was exhausting just watching him. I let him be, curious to see how long it would take him to calm down after the passerby had moved away. It took him a full minute to stop barking and at least 5 minutes for his breathing to return to normal. Ask yourself, how would you describe Domino? Someone had told Beth that the bite to her arm was a clear example of dominance aggression. But just because dogs bite doesn't mean that they're dominant, as I hope was made clear in the last chapter. Another friend had suggested that Domino must have a serious aggression problem toward other dogs, since he only barked hysterically if there was a dog walking by the house. But Domino played well at the dog park and had lots of dog buddies in the neighborhood. Beth had never heard him growl at another dog unless he was at the window. Domino was the easiest dog to train that Beth had ever had and the star of obedience class. He seemed to adore Beth, following her everywhere, and was as affectionate as she was, as quick to lick her as she was to scratch him behind his ears. I needed more information to come to any conclusions, so I started working directly with Domino. After Domino calmed down, I picked up a tennis ball and Domino immediately crouched into the classic border collie stalking posture and played an intense game of fetch with me for a few minutes. I then purposefully hid the ball and turned my attention away from him and back to Beth. Domino, however, had no intention of quitting the game. He came over to me and nudged my arm. I studiously ignored him. He nudged again, and followed it with a bark. I kept talking to Beth and told her to stay still and ignore Domino. Another bark, followed by another and another. Domino stood staring directly at me, barking one short bark over and over again, as dogs do when they are trying to get your attention. I let him continue because I wasn't training him, I was evaluating him, and I wanted to see what would happen if I didn't intervene. His barking got faster and lower pitched while he stared directly at me. I can't begin to say what is in the mind of a dog, or another person for that matter, but at that moment, Domino looked mad. Beth, on the other hand, looked nervous and kept asking me to throw the ball for him. Domino desperately wanted to play, and she desperately wanted Domino to be happy. She explained that the only way she could keep him exercised was to throw the ball in the house for him, something she could do while watching TV, working on the computer, or even talking on the phone. When he started barking at her to throw the ball, she couldn't get him to stop with her voice, but she'd learned that she could get peace and quiet by throwing the ball. As a result, ball play stopped at her house only when Domino got tired. Healthy 1-year-old border collies don't understand the word tired very well, so Beth had an arm on her like a major league pitcher, and Domino got to play ball on demand, which was most of the evening. Domino didn't just get to play ball when he wanted it. He got petting when he pawed at Beth and treats when he barked at the kitchen cabinet. Domino reminded me of a child whining for dessert before dinner in a restaurant, whose beleaguered parents finally give in just to quiet him down. Domino had learned that demanding attention with rude, pushy behavior worked, and if at first he didn't succeed, he could eventually get what he wanted if he just kept it up. As a result, Domino had grown up getting nearly everything he wanted, every time he wanted it. Kicking the pop machine. Any individual, human or canine, who grows up getting whatever he wants virtually every time that he wants it is going to mature into an individual who has no tolerance for frustration. After all, frustration derives from expectations. When we don't expect to get a reward each time that we try something, as at a slot machine, we don't get frustrated when our first efforts get no response. But if we expect a response, as when we put a dollar in the soda pop machine, we get frustrated if nothing happens. I read a news report a few years ago of someone who pulled out a handgun and shot a Coke machine because after he put in his coins, the machine wouldn't produce a Coke. I've seen otherwise gentle people kicking pop machines, and I've been tempted to kick them myself on one or two occasions. Okay, so I did it once myself. Frustration is a recipe for aggression. Just ask anyone who works with domestic abuse in families. Although most of us don't get violent as adults, frustration verging on aggression is a familiar emotion. The same goes for Domino, whose hysterical barking out the window had as much to do with frustration as anything else. Domino didn't want to attack the other dogs when he first saw them out the window. He wanted to go outside and play with them, but he couldn't. So he started barking to get what he wanted. No matter how hard he barked, he still wasn't getting what he wanted, and he simply couldn't stand it. Domino was kicking the pop machine, and Beth had gotten in the way of his temper tantrum. The acceptability of humans and dogs losing control of their emotions depends on their age. It's not alarming to see a 2-year-old child screaming in a red-faced tantrum because her ice cream fell out of the cone onto the sidewalk. But as children mature, we expect them to learn to cope with the emotions of frustration and disappointment. If you saw a 12-year-old boy having the same tantrum as a 2-year-old, you'd pay a lot of attention. And if it were a 30-year-old man, you'd clutch your children to your side and head for the car. We may feel like throwing a fit when we get frustrated, but most of us don't because we learned emotional control while we were growing up. If dogs are going to live as members of the family, they need to as well. Dogs who live independently from humans have no trouble learning to cope with not getting what they want. The difficulties of life take care of it for them. But for some of us, our love for our dogs results in their being so coddled that they never learn to tolerate frustration. How a dog responds to our caretaking is based on his or her nature as an individual. Dogs, like people, are born with different personalities, and some dogs need to learn frustration tolerance more than others. Some dogs can be coddled all their lives and remain sweet and patient until they die. But then I'll see a wise, experienced dog owner who has never had a problem with the dog until she got Charlie, who has so little tolerance for frustration that he's making life miserable for everyone, including himself. So keep in mind that some dogs can be pampered without ever creating problems. But just as with people, most dogs need to learn how to cope with frustration. Teaching dogs to tolerate disappointment is not always fun for owners, just as raising children is hard work. A lot of my clients have raised or are busy raising their own children, and they want their dogs to be the equivalent of grandchildren. Sweet things to love and cherish without the hard work of setting boundaries and enforcing rules. It's extra difficult to say no to a begging dog, with those liquid brown eyes and that endearingly fluffy face. The primal feelings of nurturance that dogs elicit from us make it especially hard to deny a dog when she's begging for attention. Besides having all the visual characteristics that cue us to be nurturing, the dogs who live in our houses are dependent on us for their very lives and unable to use words to communicate. Like infants, they not only need constant care, but they also need us to figure out what it is that they need and provide it as best we can. But as our children get older, they don't need us to cater to them as much anymore, and neither do our dogs. But some people cater to their dog's every desire as if the dog remained infantile no matter what his age, with petting on demand, endless treats, and instant attention whenever the dog shows up to get it. Most of these people would never treat their children like that, carefully raising their kids to be polite members of the household. If you're not the kind of person who loves to cater to your dog, it might be tempting to laugh at people who do, but our tendency to be nurturing is not to be sneezed at. Without it, we'd be extinct. But as with everything else, if it's misplaced or excessive, it can create a problem. It's a lot easier to stop catering to your dog when you're aware that, after about 3 years of age, she is a mature adult and perfectly capable of the emotional control that is necessary in all social animals. One client of mine was so appalled when I told her that the Lhasa Apso she'd been catering to for years was the equivalent of a 35-year-old man sponging off her that she stood up in horror. Her fluffy, middle-aged friend, who'd been lounging on her lap in my office, tumbled indignantly but harmlessly to the floor. He had bitten his owner when she had taken his collar to pull him away from a food wrapper he'd found in the backyard. He was frustrated and had lost his temper when he couldn't get what he wanted. Dogs have their own ways of expressing frustration, lashing out with their mouths when they are overwhelmed with irritable emotions. Young children use their hands the same way that dogs use their mouths. Lucky for us adults that hands don't have any teeth in them. It's simple to help your dog learn to cope with frustration and disappointment. Every time your dog comes over and begs for food or attention, just imagine a grown-up friend of yours walking up and saying, "Yo, you, hey, human, pet me, right now." I'm not arguing that you shouldn't give your dog treats or attention when he wants it. I pet my dogs dozens of times a day when they come up for stroking. But don't do it because you feel that you have no choice. You do have a choice, and your dog needs you to exercise it on occasion. Think about what you had to learn growing up. Just because you wanted an ice cream cone didn't mean that you got it. Just because you'd enjoy a massage right now doesn't mean that your friend will drop what he or she is doing and rush to your side. So don't feel guilty if you don't feel like petting your dog right now. He can cope. Honest. If he can't, then more petting is the last thing that he needs. How you respond to your dog depends partly on his age. Just like people, younger dogs haven't yet learned how to control their emotions and desires, and it's up to us to help them. A lot of young dogs don't want petting or attention as much as they want activity, and they come up to their owners to get a game started. Of course, this is when many of us pet our dogs instead of going outside and playing with them. We're tired, and we finally got a chance to sit down, and we don't want to get up right then. So we pet our dog instead, gradually teaching her that although she can't get the exercise that she needs, at least she can mug us for a massage. The solution here is simple, although not necessarily easy. If you have a young, healthy dog, especially one who sleeps in a crate all day long, then either get yourself outside and exercise with your dog or find someone else to do it for you. I say this because a large number of the behavioral problems that I see have their origin in boredom. Ironically, the problem has gotten worse as we've taken more care of our dogs and stopped letting them run free. When I was growing up in the 1950s, we exercised our dog Fudge by opening the door in the morning. Fudge trotted over to the neighbor's house and collected a rough-coated collie. The two of them joined up with a third dog and spent the morning supervising the children getting on the school bus, terrorizing the garbage men, chasing rabbits and lizards, and heaven knows what else. When Fudge came inside for the evening, there was no discussion about who was going to exercise the dog. She'd done it herself. Predictably, there were dog fights and one tragic death of a dog killed by a car. So I would no more open the door in a suburb and let my dog wander now than I would a child. It's too dangerous for the dog and not respectful of other people and their property. But we can't expect dogs to be well-behaved if they spend most of the day and all of the night in a crate, with a 15-minute-long leash walk as the highlight of their day. So, first things first, if you want your dog to stop pestering you, then give him what he needs before he has to pester you for it. But no matter how much exercise your dog needs, all dogs profit by learning how to cope with frustration. Here's an easy, benevolent way to help them learn some emotional control. Enough is enough. All my dogs know enough, which means to stop whatever they're doing, like asking for petting or bugging me with the ball, and leave me in peace. It's easy to teach, and it's a wonderful way to let your dog know that as much as you love her, it's still your life. All you need to do is to say, enough, in a low, quiet voice, and then pat her briskly on the head 2 times. If she doesn't go away, which most dogs won't the first several times you do this, stand up and walk your dog away from the couch a few feet, using your body blocking skills to back her away. Cross your arms and turn your head away to the side as you sit back down. If she comes right back as you sit down, pat pat on her head again and body block her away a second time. When she returns, be sure to do a look away so that you're not making eye contact. I'm always amused at how often we humans tell our dogs to go away, yet continue to make eye contact with them. Meanwhile, the dog is desperately looking at your face, trying to find the cue to what the heck it is that you're trying to communicate. If you turn your head away from your dog, you're saying that your interaction is over, and many dogs will seemingly understand and go away. If you keep staring at him, using words to tell him to go away, he'll keep staring back at you, sure that you are trying to visually communicate something important and desperately trying to figure out what it is by looking at your face. These two little pat-pats that I suggested are an important part of the signal. When visitors to my own home first found themselves with 4 large muzzles pressing into their lap, I wanted to find an action that I was sure that my company would readily use. I tried other ways for my guests to signal enough, as in go away, but none of them worked very well. The dogs learned the cues, but the visitors wouldn't use them, no matter how much they wanted the dogs to go away. I eventually learned that all my visitors were comfortable saying enough and going pat pat on my dog's heads when they were ready for a little less doggy breath in their face. Even dogs in training classes withdraw when their owners pat them on the head, although until they learn better techniques, The hapless owners are usually trying to praise the dog for doing something right. This time, there's a useful result to our primate-like tendency to pat dogs on top of their heads, so we might as well take advantage of it. It's the perfect situation. Humans are quick to pat dogs on the top of their heads, but dogs don't really like it. Remember that patting is not the same as stroking. Most dogs adore massage-like strokes, just as we do. A wolf handler reinforced the usefulness of this technique when she told me that she and the other handlers got wolves to stop bugging them by patting them on the head two or three times. It's not aggressive or threatening, it's just mildly aversive. So both dogs and wolves decide to go elsewhere, probably to the person sitting next to you. My nieces call these pats happy slappies. They coined the phrase after coming to watch a taping of Petline, an animal behavior advice show on Animal Planet that I co-hosted with my ex-husband, Doug McConnell. They were visiting the set and watched in horror as a guest veterinarian swooped into the studio dressed like a Las Vegas showgirl. She deposited her tiny dog onto the rug, where he promptly urinated, defecated, and almost killed a visiting cockatiel while she changed into what became known as the Killer Bee outfit. Clothed in yellow and black striped lycra, the producer eventually forced her to change, she asked to borrow my Luke for a demonstration of brushing a dog's teeth. Luke is a trooper, so I said sure. Luke had to sit and stay on top of a table while directors, four cameramen, and the usual herd of assistant producers swirled around getting ready to tape. Finally, it was time to roll the cameras. Our guest veterinarian explained to the audience the importance of brushing a dog's teeth, and then, without so much as a word or a friendly touch, grabbed Luke's mouth and opened it as you'd open up your purse on a busy hot day when you can't find your wallet. Luke's eyes got huge while I soundlessly mouthed, "Good boy, good boy," and held out my hand in the universal stay signal behind the camera. After abusing Luke's mouth for a couple of minutes, I'd have bitten my own dentist if he'd been that rude, she turned to Luke and slapped him twice on top of the head to thank him. Little did she know that we had just taped a segment that explained how most dogs hate being slapped on top of their head in exactly the way she had just illustrated. The entire crew burst into belly laughs, and we had to tape it again, minus the slaps. Poor Luke. Bless his patient, benevolent heart. The next day, my creative nieces, Annie and Emily Piat, wrote and acted out a satire of the show in which they devised a mechanical pancake turner that slaps your dog upside the head to praise him for obeying you. They called it the Happy Slappy. So I advise owners to use Happy Slappies to get a friendly dog to go away. It's the last thing you should do if you're around a dog that you don't know or that might be afraid of people. Remember how scary it is for shy dogs to have people reach over their heads. But if you have a friendly goofball in your face and you'd like a little break, then say, "Enough," in a low voice and give him a few happy slappies on top of his head. You may have to follow it up with a few body blocks and turning your head away, but it works better than anything else I've ever tried. Please don't think I'm suggesting that you stop giving your dog attention. I slather attention on my four dogs like butter on hot corn. But I decide when to do it, and I don't reinforce rude and pushy behavior by mindlessly petting them when they jab their muzzles into my arm. It's not easy because Luke is a pro at soliciting the attention that he adores. Luke's favorite events are banquets, where he gets to schmooze around the room, getting chicken and massages from every table because of his gentlemanly demeanor and his elegant mane of white fur ruffled around his chest. He looks something like Rhett Butler at a ball, and he fits in well at fancy banquet dinners. It didn't take him long to learn that he could keep massages going by nuzzling diners when they stopped petting him. If nuzzles didn't work, inserting his muzzle under an arm and pushing up quickly did, since this technique tends to spill drinks or send silverware flying. It's hard to eat when your utensils are launched skyward, so diners would give up on their rubber chicken and stroke Luke again instead. Luke tried to bring this technique home, but It's the last thing that I want to encourage. Luke is 11 years old now, a grown-up, mature male who has no business acting like a puppy. But it'd be a lot easier if I weren't a human, a primate who is hardwired to groom others endlessly and to seek out touch as moths do light. Like a lot of people, I love petting my dogs. Not only am I a primate, I'm an especially cuddly one at that. I go to sleep petting my cat Isla, who's purring on my chest. I get on the floor in the evening and spoon with all of my dogs, making contact with as much of their bodies as I can. I love holding hands at the movies, but I don't need a dog who gets what he wants for being pushy. Nor do I need to treat Luke like a fragile infant who truly requires attention on demand. So I don't pet Luke if he nudges me. I'm careful to pet him when he's being polite instead of pushy. Sometimes when he mugs me for massages, I turn my head away, careful to keep my nose up like a valley girl so that I look dismissive rather than coy. When I really want to pet him but he's being a pest, I ask him to do something, like sit or bow, so that I can pet him as a reinforcement for good behavior rather than bad. You can also help your dog learn to stop pestering you and entertain himself by giving him a hollow toy stuffed with food after he goes to settle down. Don't leap up and give him a chew toy the instant that he comes over to beg. That's just teaching him that begging is even more productive than he thought. Rather, say, enough, when he scratches at your leg, or whatever his version of making demands is, and body block him away. Once he lies down and settles himself, get up, stay quiet, no need to talk, and give him the toy stuffed with treats that you efficiently have stored in the kitchen for just this very moment. Put it down right where he had settled, even if he's gotten up to follow you out of the room. Now your dog has learned that it pays to settle down on the floor instead of working you like a slot machine. This is especially helpful for young dogs who can barely contain themselves, the equivalent of giving young children something to do with their hands while you finish your meal in a restaurant. Smart parents don't wait for trouble. They head it off at the pass by giving their children something appropriate to do rather than waiting for them to get attention by doing something wrong. You can do the same for your dog and have more time to relax. Mind your manners at the door. You'd be appalled if you visited a home where the children knocked you over while running out the door, yet many of us let our dogs do just that. It's not that I don't love exuberance, I do. But just as we teach our children that there's a time and a place for everything, it makes sense that we should expect that of our dogs, too. If dogs are going to be part of our family, then we have to raise them to be polite. Just because they're dogs instead of children is no reason to think that their going into a frenzy is cute. If they're going to live with us, dogs need to learn impulse control and some good, old-fashioned patience. In the wild, their own family would teach them manners, so don't abdicate your responsibility as an elder and encourage your dog to act like a baby when he's become a grown-up. Keep in mind, though, that the importance of this exercise depends a lot on the personality of your dog. Some mellow or extremely submissive dogs would never dream of barging out the door in front of you. If your dog is like that, put this book down for a minute and go tell him how special he is. All dogs are not like him, honest. Other dogs enjoy illustrating why clipping is illegal in football. Many of my clients have been badly hurt after their dog upended them while charging out the door. I think the count is 3 knee surgeries, 2 sets of broken bones, and 1 concussion. I've had more cases in which dogs have gotten into horrible fights at the door, like overly excited fans at a ball game. I know of dozens of dogs who bolted out the doorway and disappeared for hours or days. Some of these dogs ended up being killed by cars or being the subject of nasty lawsuits. So good manners at the door isn't a trivial issue for dogs or the humans who love them. It's relatively easy to teach dogs to be polite at the door. One of the reasons why I suspect that doorways have some special significance to dogs is that they seem to catch on quickly how to behave at the door, while exercises like healing take months of work. There's nothing relevant to a dog about healing, My own translation of heal from a canine perspective is, walk slowly at the pace of death by your owner's knee while ignoring all interesting things. You don't need to use food or toys for this training because access to the great outdoors is its own reward. If Fido behaves politely, he gets to go outside, which is what he wants in the first place. If he doesn't, he doesn't. Simple enough, and simple is always good when both humans and dogs are learning something new. Start by deciding what signal you're going to use to ask your dog to pause at the doorway. We use wait in our training classes, but I use mind myself, short for mind your manners, because wait sounds too much like one of my herding signals. Just pick a word that doesn't sound like the other signals that you use and be consistent with it. Remember to use a quiet but low voice and to say the word as if it were a statement rather than a question. Wait? Said like a question, translates to something like, would you consider waiting? Are you going to listen this time, huh? Maybe? Please? For safety's sake, if the door that you're going to use for training goes to an unfenced area, be sure to have your dog on a leash. Don't, however, use the leash to pull your dog back from the door, because doing so will cause your dog to pull toward the door even harder. The muscles of all mammals work against opposing forces, so whenever you pull on a dog, you cause him automatically to pull back. If you pull steadily back on the leash, you aren't training your dog to stop pulling forward. You're encouraging it. So keep the leash loose while you're doing your training at the door, although I'll be the first to warn you that it's not always easy. It's so tempting for us to pull on a leash when it's in our hand that it works better to have someone else hold the leash while you work on wait at the door. You can also tie the leash to a railing or to your belt if it's a small dog, so that you won't use it to try pulling your dog away from the door. It should be your body that keeps the dog from rushing out the door, not the leash. Once you get to the door, move yourself in front of your dog so that you're between the door and your dog. Stand facing your dog with your back to the door so that you can see what she's doing and respond to it. If she's crowded up against the door, which most dogs will be, back her away by moving directly toward her, herding her with body blocks away from the door. Do this quietly and gently, moving forward with small, quiet steps so that she has no choice but to back up. If she tries to dart around you, move quickly to the right or left to block her with your body. Just keep imagining yourself as a goalie whose job is to keep the ball from entering the goal. Once you have quietly and gently moved her back about 3 to 4 feet from the door, back yourself up toward the door and give a signal like mind or wait in a low, even-toned voice, and then partly open the door. What you do next depends on your dog's behavior. Most dogs dart forward when they see the door open, or even when you move back toward the door, so be ready to use your body to block the path to the door. Concentrate on not repeating your verbal signal. Not surprisingly, this takes some practice at first, and just using your body to impede her forward progress. Some people prefer to close the door before a dog can get through it rather than using their body to stop the dog. This teaches the dog that if she tries to charge through, the door will shut before she gets there. But if she sits and waits patiently, it opens. If you use this method, be sure not to slam the door on your dog. I've seen it happen, so my preference is to use my body to block the doorway. But both methods work. Once your dog has paused, either simply stopping her forward movement or ideally stopping and looking up at you, even just for a microsecond, say, okay, and let her out the door. Timing is everything. It's critical to reinforce your dog when she first takes the pressure off the door. So watch her carefully and be ready to open the door when she first pauses, even just the littlest bit. As time goes on, you can expect her to do a better and better job of being patient. But in the beginning, help her win by being observant and being ready to release her as soon as she does anything even approaching what you want. While you are working on this, resist the oh-so-human urge to drape yourself over the doorway to protect it. You want your dog to learn to make a choice for herself. She needs to learn the consequences of waiting or trying to make a break for it. Leave the path through the doorway clear, but stand right beside it and be ready to move into it if you need to. If your dog chooses to wait, good girl. Be ready to release her by saying her name in a lilting, sing-song tone of voice or using your usual release word like okay or free. If she tries to bolt through, use your body to block her and then give her another chance to pause. Most dogs catch on incredibly fast because they learn that if they wait politely, they get to go outside, and if they try to charge through, they get stopped. Let me warn you now about the most common mistakes that people make so that you can work to avoid them. Repeating the verbal signal over and over again. Think chimp. Concentrate on saying it just once and then letting your body do the rest. Using the leash to stop the dog rather than your body. Again, another very human thing to do. It's almost impossible not to do something with a leash in your hand. Use your body. Not the leash. Walking or leaning forward toward your dog when he has already stopped moving toward the door. Remember that body blocks are very powerful visual signals, and the microsecond that your dog stops leaning forward and putting pressure toward the door, you can feel it even if you're not touching the dog. You should respond instantly by stopping your own forward motion. Continuing to move or lean forward puts too much pressure on your dog and will create its own problems. Don't confuse your use of wait with stay. Stay means that your dog needs to remain in one exact location until being released, while wait means that your dog can't move forward until released. If you say wait and your dog turns away from the door entirely, that is absolutely fine. Wait basically means don't proceed forward without further instructions. You can certainly use stay at the door if you'd like, and it is another good way to stop your dog from barging out the door, but it's a different concept. Don't move until I tell you. I prefer teaching wait in this context because I think it's good for dogs to figure out how to inhibit their impulses for themselves rather than letting us make all their decisions for them. Oh, he's just so friendly. You don't have to let your dog dance all over your head, honest. If you like it when your dog jumps up to greet you, that's fine. But there's no reason that your dog should be so disrespectful of you that he knocks you over. Other dogs would never permit such rude behavior, and you shouldn't either. One of the first dogs that I ever worked with was Duke, a huge floppy-eared Doberman Pinscher that his elderly owner, Edith, had gotten for protection. Duke grew up the first year of his life with a lot of love, but no boundaries. And when I met him at the front door, he rose up and slapped his huge paws onto my shoulders. After almost knocking me over, Duke had flattened several of Edith's elderly friends, Duke proceeded to race around the living room, leaping over tables and chairs, knocking down lamps and books in an excited frenzy, until he finally settled on my lap on the couch. Paws again on my shoulders while he slurped his tongue across my face. Meanwhile, Edith laughed until she cried and told me how much she loved Duke's friendliness. But if Duke had pulled that greeting routine with dogs at the park, he would have been a social pariah within seconds. Silly young puppies are taught by their elders that it's not polite to leap onto another's head and to be oblivious to his personal space. There's no reason that dogs shouldn't learn to be respectful of your personal space, too. I wouldn't want to see a dog forced to do a sit-stay every time he greeted a human, any more than I want to see children curtsy when adults enter the room. But social animals all have an awareness of the personal space around others, and as they mature, they learn to be polite about not barging into others' faces, even when they're excited. It's actually very easy to teach dogs to be polite when they greet you or when they want to come cuddle up on the couch. You just have to stop acting like a human and learn to move like a dog. Rather than backing up when a friendly but rude dog lunges toward you, use the body blocks that we talked about in Chapter 2 to protect the personal space around you. Say you're seated on a chair and Duke is moving across the room at the speed of light. It's clear that in three strides, he's going to launch himself into your lap. Instead of doing what comes naturally, which is to lean backward to avoid the furry missile, which creates a space for the dog to move into, lean forward with your chest and shoulders and meet him more than halfway. Avert your face, keep your hands tucked into your belly, and use your shoulders and torso to block the dog from entering the circle of space around you. Once he stopped trying to climb into your lap, reinforce him with petting, praise, treats, or play when all four of his paws are on the ground. You usually have to repeat the body blocks a few times before all four paws will actually stay on the floor. But it's amazing how many dogs drop leaping up at you from their repertoire. Some people feel guilty about stopping their dogs from leaping all over them. They shouldn't, unless they allow grown-up humans to sail onto their head and shoulders whenever they feel like it. If you like it when your dog jumps up to greet you, go ahead. Let her do it. But don't let your dog behave as though she can barrel into humans with no consideration for their safety or personal space. That's not friendly. It's just rude. The sound of silence. Another thing that we can all do to help our dogs behave like polite members of our family involves virtually no dog training whatsoever. If you're like most of us, you might have to teach yourself something. Though, and as all trainers know, people are harder to train than dogs. It is truly simple, however, and it is this. Shut up. Okay, maybe that's a little blunt. But the fact is that we tend to talk so much to our dogs that we not only confuse them, we overstimulate them and sometimes scare them. Lest you think I'm being rude, please know that I include myself in the category of people who would profit by being quieter around their dogs. We humans are relentlessly verbal primates, and there are times when I chatter like an idiot to my dogs. Worse, I sometimes raise my voice, getting louder and louder if my dogs aren't doing what I want them to, until I get hold of myself and start acting like a good dog trainer. Certainly, every year I get better about using a quiet voice with my dogs. And it's rare now that I raise my voice when I shouldn't. But it still happens on occasion because it's very human to get loud when we get frustrated, as we learned in Chapter 1. It seems to be a trait that we share with our relatives, the chimps. But although Mike the chimpanzee may have risen to dominance on a dramatic crescendo of clanging metal tins, getting loud isn't going to teach your dog much about being patient and polite. We talked earlier about the value of staying quiet but using a low pitch when you want your dog to respond. But here I want to talk about what effect yelling has on your dog's perception of you. Getting loud may get your dog's attention just as it would get the attention of students in a classroom, but what message does yelling convey about you? Yelling makes you look scary and out of control. It might get your dog's attention, but it doesn't make you look like a calm, collected leader, and it doesn't model the behavior that you'd like to see from him. It can make your dog worse in the short run and cause him to lose faith in you in the long run. I speak from experience. As I mentioned earlier, when I first started working herding dogs on sheep, I was quick to get anxious when things started to feel out of control. That was about 95% of the time. That high-pitched, nervous voice was like pouring gasoline on a fire. And Drift, my first border collie, would clench his teeth and run at the sheep even harder. I spent an entire summer teaching myself to use a quiet, calm voice in times of sheep-herding excitement. I can do it now about 90% of the time, maybe a little more. But some handlers can speak calmly to dogs even when the sheep are thundering out of control. The dog looks as if he's about to leap up and eat one, and the entire fracas is taking place beside a busy highway. These people are like gods to me, and I try to spend as much time as possible beside them in the hope that it rubs off. Dogs seem to love people who are quiet, cool, and collected, and prefer sitting beside them over sitting beside others. We humans, too, are attracted to those rare individuals who have a dignified and quiet sense of power about them. One of the people I know with that aura is Julie Simpson, the first woman to win the Supreme Championships of the International Sheepdog Society in Great Britain. She doesn't say much to a dog, and when she does, it's usually soft-spoken, but she radiates a sense of inner peace and confidence. The dogs in the training clinic that she gave listened to her when she was 100 yards away and speaking quietly. You may not be able to generate the kind of respect that Julie can, but you can get your dog to pay more attention to you if you radiate quiet confidence rather than using a loud voice all the time. Be thoughtful about what you say to your dog and teach yourself to go closer to your dog to get his attention rather than raising your voice from a distance away. Think about Gandhi and the Dalai Lama. Breathe. Smile. Be comfortable setting boundaries, as all good teachers are. Having a dog who respects you as a quiet, confident leader that he can count on is a wonderful feeling. Every bit as good as having a dog who loves you. Lucky us, we can have both at the same time. And part of it is learning to simply say less rather than more. Benevolent leadership. Leader is another loaded term in dog training. The concept of dominance has been so misused and misunderstood that even the word leadership has fallen out of favor in some circles. That's a shame because most social animals profit from the wisdom of a wise leader. Teaching dogs to be patient and polite while acting like a loving, benevolent leader has helped hundreds of my clients who were having trouble with their dogs. I don't know whether the problems between some of my clients and their dogs were because of their social relationships or because the dogs had no frustration tolerance, but the suggestions presented in this chapter can positively affect both. Perhaps the owner starts to act more like a benevolent leader and, as with troubled adolescent boys who finally find a wise older mentor, that action itself results in better behavior. Or perhaps the dogs learn that they can get what they want by being patient and polite rather than rude and pushy, and learn to deal with frustration without becoming aggressive or out of control. I'd argue that it depends on the dog. Every dog is different. Some are truly status-seeking and do better when their owners provide leadership. Others can't regulate their own emotions and have no impulse control and need to learn patience. The most problematic dogs that I see are a combination of both: easily aroused dogs with no emotional control who are reactive to any perceived challenge to their own social position. On the other hand, some dogs are so benign, people-proof, I call them, that we couldn't mess them up if we tried. If you have one of those, read the rest of this chapter as an interesting intellectual exercise and smile bemusedly over the rest of us who own normal dogs. Whose house is it anyway? Even though dog trainers have overplayed the importance of social status in the past, it is still relevant in some cases. I've had clients whose dogs controlled all the social interactions. They barked when the owners were on the phone, demanded attention if another dog came up to say hi, decided when to play, when to get petted, and when to get fed. How and when your dog gets attention is not always just about learning patience and a tolerance for frustration. It's also an important aspect of social relationships because who can get attention on demand depends on their rank in the social hierarchy. High-status chimps, bonobos, humans, and wolves, to name a few species, are always the center of visual attention of the group. High-ranking individuals get to decide whether to accept a subordinate solicitation of social contact or not. Subordinates may initiate contact more often, but the one with the higher rank gets to decide when and if to interact. Low-ranking Pip continually tries to get Queen Tulip's attention by licking her muzzle and groveling at her feet. Most of the time, Tulip looks away, refusing to give Pip the canine equivalent of the time of day. My friend Beth Miller reminded me of how the same scenario is acted out on playgrounds around the country, with the cool kids snubbing the losers at recess. Think about how these asymmetrical social interactions play out at your house. If your dog gets all the attention and controls all the interactions, then it's possible that she interprets your behavior as supportive of her as a high-status member of the group. Some dogs insist on controlling who touches whom and when. Some of these dogs show no respect for the personal space of their owners, leaping onto their laps and getting in their face whenever they feel like it. They also decide when and where they can be touched and may growl at their owners if the owners initiate contact. Look again at grooming interactions in a variety of species. In most social species, the lower status animals groom the higher status ones, not vice versa. If your dog can demand that you drop everything you're doing and pet him on demand, then in his mind, you've no business taking away the pork chop that you drop later that night. Status-seeking dogs might take possession of all the objects in the house, including the bed, it being one of the prize objects in a household to both humans and dogs. Until I started working as an applied animal behaviorist, I had no idea how many people couldn't get back into bed after going to the bathroom. Who would have guessed that the country is full of men wandering around the house at night because their wife's dog won't let them back in bed after they got up to pee? It's sort of amusing in a stand-up comic kind of way, but not so funny when those threats turn into bites. Some people still think it's funny. I'll never forget the look on one husband's face as his wife guffawed over the last bite he'd received from her Lhasa Apso. She thought it was hysterical, even though his arm looked like fresh hamburger. He and I were not so amused. My first suggestion involved a marriage counselor. Even though I think dominance aggression is usually an incorrect description of what's going on with the dog, there are cases in which social status is relevant. Some of the problems that I see are not so much about dogs who are dominant as about dogs who simply live in a state of confusion about who's who. Sometimes they seem to have the most social freedom, while other times the humans do. If this is true, if in some households there's no clear leader, then there is value in clarifying the social relationship between human and dog. If dogs live in a world in which they perceive themselves as high in status, but in that tension-filled beta category, then based on what we know about social hierarchies, they are more likely to obsess about status and try to move up in the world. My favorite way to work with status-seeking dogs is to teach them that social status isn't all that important at their house, because they can get what they want by being patient and polite, rather than pushy and status-conscious. If owners can remember that neither humans nor dogs need to have social status to feel loved, then they can create a more harmonious household in which their dogs feel cherished but aren't trying to improve their position in the hierarchy. It's stressful in middle management, so do dogs like this a favor and don't confuse them with mixed messages. Keep in mind that this only applies to dogs who are status-seeking and that a large number of dogs wouldn't try to move up on the social register if you soaked it in liver juice. If you pay attention to the suggestions in this chapter and expect your dog to learn to be patient and polite as he matures, you'll avoid many of the problems that status-seeking dogs can create. Spare the rod and have a better dog. You don't need to use physical force to impress your dog. If you do, you're sending the message that you have no real power and no alternative but force and intimidation. It's sad that it is taking us so long to drop the threat of physical injury from our training repertoire, no matter what the species. You may get obedience out of a dog by threatening him, but mostly you're going to get a dog who is afraid of you. Far too often you'll get a dog who learns to defend himself by getting aggressive back. Aggression leads to more aggression, and many of the dog bites that I see were made in self-defense. However, there are other dogs who love a good fight and can't wait for you to make their day. You may win the battle with these dogs, but you're not going to win the war. And who wants a battlefield in their living room anyway? It's bad enough that we use unnecessary amounts of violence in training, but it's especially problematic because our dogs don't perceive it as discipline. Dogs are disciplined by their elders with a swift, inhibited bite across their muzzle, a behavior I strongly suggest you do not replicate. Trust me, you could never do it fast enough, you probably wouldn't be able to do it with the intensity that another dog would, and you would end up getting bitten yourself. Almost as bad, you'll get a mouthful of dog hair. Dogs do not discipline other dogs by biting at the scruff of their neck. Bites to that area are about challenges to the hierarchy or are the equivalent of barroom brawls. Some dogs can be effectively corrected with scruff shakes, but that doesn't mean that you should do them yourself. When and where to use a physical punishment on a dog is one of the hardest things to learn in dog training, and it's the last thing that people who haven't had a lot of training themselves ought to try. Many people use force because of the myth about getting dominance over their dogs. But yelling at a dog, reaching for her collar, and shaking her is a very primate kind of thing to do, not something that she will inherently understand. It might make her afraid of you, and it might make her pay a lot of attention to you, but it won't teach her what you'd like her to do. Giving a dog a hard jerk on her collar is like wrapping a child's hand in school when she gets the wrong answer. It may make the child afraid of making a mistake, but it doesn't do anything to teach her the right answer. Because aggression does work on some dogs in some cases, some people use those successes to justify harsh treatment of all dogs under all circumstances. But just because something that is wrong and cruel is sometimes successful is no reason to advocate it. You can torture and intimidate people to get them to do what you want, and if you use enough force and control, it will work. That doesn't make it acceptable. Correcting your dog. In my experience, people usually get physical with their dogs when the dogs do something wrong. Most of my clients who hit or shook their dogs honestly didn't know what else to do. It's no good to tell people not to get rough with their dogs and then give them no alternative. So here's an alternative that works for almost all dogs and almost all people. If your dog is doing something that you don't want her to do, your job is to do two things. First, stop her from doing what she's doing by startling her. You don't have to hurt her or terrorize her, just interrupt her by making a noise that evokes what is called the mammalian startle response. If you slap the wall or the table, drop a paperback book, or toss an empty pop can with a few pennies in it on the floor, she should momentarily look up to see what the noise was about. Like lightning, you're going to take advantage of her attention and redirect it onto what you want her to do. Say, for example, your 8-month-old Labrador is chewing on the coffee table. Your job is to interrupt that behavior and instantly redirect her to doing something appropriate, like gnawing on the chew toy that you spent a fortune on last night. Say no in a low, quiet voice and immediately make a sound to startle her. In the microsecond that she looks up, say good girl to praise her for stopping what she was doing. Smooch or click your tongue to keep her attention on you, and then redirect her attention to something more appropriate. The key is to be prepared to take advantage of that half a second or less of attention that you're going to get when she looks up. It won't last long, and most beginners lose the moment by staring back at their dog while deciding what to do next. Their dogs figure that there's nothing interesting going on, so why not go back to chewing on the table leg? Be ready to act the microsecond that your dog looks up, and you'll find this working like a charm. It sounds simple, but as with all dog training, it takes some practice because the timing of your responses needs to be in sync with your dog's behavior. Work on responding to your dog's actions as quickly as you can. Even if your timing isn't Olympian yet, you're going to be way ahead of the game if you remember the basics. Interrupt the problem behavior and immediately redirect it to something else. However, if your dog is absolutely committed to what she's doing, say, barking out the window at the neighbor's mutt who loves to taunt her, then there's probably no sound you can make that's going to get her attention. In cases like that, give up trying to get louder and louder from across the room and go over closer to her. I like to lure dogs away from contacts like that with a treat held right up to their nose, like luring a donkey with a carrot, and then ask them to do something else when they're away from all the excitement. In some cases, dogs are so excited that it helps to quietly put their leash on and use that and food lures to help them move away from the focus of their attention. Then ask your dog to sit pretty, or go get your big ball, or go upstairs and wake up. Fill in the name of that other person in the house who always lets you get up to take the dog out. Once she learns that your voice is a predictor of something even more fun than what she's doing, you can drop out the food lure as your dog improves. These suggestions are not substitutes for a complete dog training manual or good video, or better yet, a good dog training class where you'll have a coach to help you out. But if you can get into the habit of interrupting your dog from doing what you don't want and simply redirecting him to what you do want him to do, both you and your dog will be much happier. It seems very human to stay fixated on the negative. No seems to come out of our mouths as easy as breathing. But saying no doesn't teach a dog what to do, and it keeps the attention focused on it and nothing else. If I said, "Stop thinking about red." Now I mean it, don't think about red. How easy would it be? But if I said, "Don't think about red, think about blue. Beautiful, cool blue. Think blue." Wouldn't it be easier to stop thinking about, what was that other color again? There are an infinite number of things that your dog can do wrong, but only a few that he can do right. Why don't you make life easy and teach your dog what right is rather than continually saying no to yet one more thing that is wrong? So when your dog is doing something wrong, say no quietly. Use another sound to startle him to get his attention, and then redirect him onto doing something that he should be doing. Don't think about physically punishing him. Think about teaching him. Replace the hot, red aggression of old-fashioned dog training with the calm, cool benevolence of sky blue. It's a lovely color.